I just wanted to ask you, you know, the effect of technology in the Jewish world today.
No, so I can tell you as follows. First of all, I don't agree with you that computers are controversial, because if that is correct, then I'm leading a demonstration next Saturday night in Tel Aviv, in Rabin Square, against cars. Since cars have been invented, 22 million plus people have been killed by cars. Get my message? Controversial? Wow. 22 million killed. We're not going to do away with cars. We're not going to do away with telephones. You know how much Lashon Hara has been spoken over telephones? Just think for a minute. Computers, it's part of life. There's kosher, there's treif. We have to teach you v'chata b'chayim. What I find fabulous for me, you might know I developed an expertise in response literature. The story of response literature in Rakefet is very interesting. Rabbi Koopman said to me in 71 when I was going in to teach in Michalam, he said, I want you to give some postgraduate classes, but do something different. And you, who studied with the Rav and Shas and Paiskim, but you have a PhD in Jewish history, combine the two. That's why I got interested in response literature. I turned it into an art in the Kollel. I'm not going to elaborate, but I've been giving shiurim since the Kollel opened with a formal program in 78. From 78 to 2015, I haven't repeated a shiur. And like, for instance, I just ended 2 years on a Reuven. Not the Gemara. Anyone can teach the Gemara. This is an overlook at the Gemara and the Poskim and the Machlokes and what's going on in the history, and I used Adam Mintz's doctorate at NYU on a Reuven, which just was completed about 2 years ago. Now, at times I need a rare book, particularly the Rabbanim in America who published Svarim for the last 150 years. People don't realize that the Rabbanim here, Lamdanim, they had to deal with Erev. I need the book. Hebrew books. Online, you can get the rarest Svarim published in America. Now, I'll give you another example. I was very much taken in by the personality, the learning, the outlook of the Ugavara Rav, Reb Menachem Klein. Reb Menashe Klein, Reb Menashe HaKatan, as he cites. And you know, if not for Reb Menashe HaKatan, there would be no Erev in Brooklyn today. He was the one. I dialogued with Reb Moshe Feinstein. It's a very fascinating topic. But who is this Reb Menashe Klein? I met his chavruta, his childhood chavruta, Eli Weisel. I met him in Israel, sat with him. I never read Reb Menashe Klein. And he died about 3 years ago. So I went to YouTube, and all this was taught to me by my students. I learned how to use a computer when I was over 70. But I said my mother learned over 70, Zichron Avracha. I know how to reach the New York Yankee website, Baruch Hashem, and I can do a little bit more. So I go to the computer, I punch in Rabbi Menashe Klein. I got a number of videos of him. One was so moving, where he's sitting in Ramot with Balei Tshuva and answering their questions. And his Gabayim is sitting next to him. And when he doesn't know the word in Hebrew, he says it in English, Reb Menashe Klein, and they translate into Hebrew. And it was a sight to see the Balei Tshuva looking at him with such awe. I felt as if I knew him. Give you another example. The Majestad Rebbe was in America for a dinner where he spoke, a fundraiser. On his way back to the airport, it's a year and a half ago, it was Hanukkah, and they asked him to come to Borough Park, and with Ben Sion Schenker, in his 90s, they made a Fabrengen, had students there, and it's was put on YouTube, maybe 30 minutes. It's 30 minutes of heaven with Ben Sion Schenker and singing the Machitza tunes. You've seen it. That's what I'm talking about. So I look at the computer, it is mind-boggling how much Teira, Yirat Shemayim, the Sheyurim, the Daf Yomi, that there's filth and trash. There's filth and trash in life, wherever you go. This is the challenge, the chinuch. We're not going to get rid of it. We're not going to get rid of cars. We're not going to get rid of televisions. But the money wasted in rallying against taking a Met Stadium and that money, to me, it's that money could be used so constructively. But you have to teach in a classroom. And I'll tell you, my own feeling is when you turn it into a getchka, that the computer was totally bad. So any student has a shtickle yetzahara, and any bright kid has a shtickle yetzahara. It's part of being bright. That's dafka what he's going to look for. When I was a Rebbe in YU teaching the Daf al Haseda, I never skipped any Gemara. Because I knew one thing. If I skip a Gemara that has some sexual overtones, it's the first Gemara the student's going to run to the Sansino and check out. Better he should learn it with the Rebbe than ignore it altogether. And I can give you more examples. Even Agata, in the Litvish yeshivas, they skipped Agata. I always said a Rebbe should teach Agata so a student should get a more total picture of Torah Hashem Tamima. Agata, you gain a soul, you gain varimkai. So, all right, this is what we were talking about with the computer, and there are many more examples.
With your own work, because you've used the website so effectively, do you find a feedback, a response to... because you have a limited number of people sitting in a classroom with you.
So I find too big a response. And I asked... he asked Richard Joel, whose children I taught, give me a secretary. The Rebbe had people around him. The answers of the letters Rebbe is the Rebbe's drawing ideas to someone like Dr. Mindel and the Gershon, what was his first name? Gershon, am I correct?
Not sure.
We'll check it out. But I believe so. But he formulated the letter, then he brought it back to the Rebbe. So endless emails come in from all over the world. So what I do is my secretary prints out the emails. Secretary of the Gris Kolev. It's not my personal secretary. I feel bad. Half her work is involved keeping Rakefet afloat. And I write out answers longhand on my stationery. I sign them, Aaron. I don't have time to write Rakefet. I apologize. And she scans them and sends them out. But the response, it's overwhelming. Overwhelming. And that's why Ami published a picture of me, beautiful picture. I don't know where they got it. It's the picture that I would love for my to perpetuate what I looked like teaching. Evidently, it was taken when YU wanted me a year ago in May for getting the most hits online than any other Rosh Yeshiva. So it's a whole story. Some gentleman gave some heavy money to YU in our honor. And I gave nine different Sherman under the auspices of Bernard Revel Graduate School for YU. I think that's where the picture is from. It's from the public session. They made a luncheon in my honor, whatever. So you have an impact. So what happened was I defended two Talmidim of mine, Rabbi Przanski and Rabbi student, Steve Przanski, Gil student. They're having an argument with Ami on Das Teira on some aspect. I'm a sideshow. But the attack was on Rakefet. Why? He's having influence. They showed the picture. It took me a minute to figure out why they published this beautiful picture. Suddenly I'm a pin-up picture there in Ami. And my daughter said to me in 1 second, it took me 60 seconds, she hit it in 1 second. They want the world to see what you look like, and I saw Sashay, it's on a board, on payers, without a black hat, without this, without that, without the other thing. Tremendous impact from, you have no idea, I'll be honest with you, you have no idea how many Haredim I saved for Yiddishkeit. You see, people become Haredi, they become Balei Tshuva. Balei Tshuva gravitate. They need something tangible. to be a guy like Rav Kefir or Lahavdil between your humble servant and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, they can't be like us. I've my life since 11 years of age is Kulo Torah. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, from the age of Chvesef 2, I think he was already reading Hebrew, Kulo Torah. But about Shiva, then after a few years, they hear all the negativism. This is no good, and that is no good, and that is no good. It's not Abikairis, and this is an Eiswaffe. Some of them throw it all away. Understand? They listen to Rakefet. Others, wow, we can be good Jews without being negative idiots. Baruch Hashem. I'll tell you a true story.
Let me just sit down.
It's an amazing story. And I'll tell you the name. He tells the story publicly. His name is Harry Andora. He's from Manchester. From a Haredi home. Very bright. The early 70s, he heard about BMT in Israel.
BMT is?
The first school, the last surviving faculty member, the school that began in 69, when I was asked to join the faculty in Jerusalem, Beit Medrash LaTorah, BMT, the first school designed to export Torah to the Western world. Okay? It was Torah with an Anglo overtone. After the Six-Day War, it's history, it changed the history. It doesn't exist anymore, but the idea is there must be a quarter of a million souls in Israel who are direct descendants of BMT and such programs. He wanted to go to BMT. His father told him, over my dead body, it's a Tzioni institution, sponsored by the Jewish Agency, Torah Culture Department. He went to Sutherland, went to a right-wing yeshiva in England, married a Rosh Yeshiva's daughter, had two children, and by the age of 30, he threw it all away. A lot of baloney. Gave a get, went to London, went into business deals, made some money, lived with a Mohammedan woman who was a professor at the University of London, never married her, lived with her for, it must be 10 years or more. And then when he turned 40, he started asking, who am I? Why am I in this world? And someone told him, go to YU Torah and pick up someone named Rabbi Aaron Rakefet. Picked up, left the woman, started coming to Israel, doing business in Israel, became close to Merkaz HaRav, Rav Avram Shapiro, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Came back, belayed for nefesh. Watch. Now has a big business deal coming down in Jerusalem, and he goes to the Rosh Yeshiva, to Rav Shapiro, and he says, look, I know Hebrew, but this is a lot of money. Give me a student who will sit with me in the final negotiations, and when I sign the contract, who can tell it to me in English, I know exactly what I'm getting into. So Rosh Yeshiva says, I'll send my chavruta. Sends this young man who Rosh Yeshiva has a daily chavruta with, and they sit together and he explains everything it is, and he signs the contract. And they bring in a coffee, cake, Danish. And he says to the young man, where were you born? He says, Yerushalayim. He says, how do you know English so well? He says, well, my grandparents insisted on speaking English to their children, although in Chutz Laretz they spoke only Hebrew. I write this in Washington. In America we spoke only Hebrew, and in Israel we spoke only English. So my mother knows English as a native language, and she married someone who also grew up, spent formative years in America, then came in Aliyah, and I picked it up in the house. So, who's your family? Who's your grandfather? He says, oh, my grandfather teaches Torah. What's his name? mentions the name Rav Rakefet, Harry literally faints. Got to revive him. Can I call your grandfather? Can I speak to him? He thinks like I'm a Rebbe, you know, you got it. Grandson says, yeah, what's the big deal? And they pull out the phone and he calls and I get on that. Anyway, he came to see me at the Kollel, and it's a beautiful story. You should know, he came, but he married a girl from South Africa who had never been married. He's still in touch. I tell him all the time, you got to remain in touch with your children. His children are, you know, what Haredim learned. He said, be proud. They're big in Torah. You're a Shemayim. Beautiful. He's a mensch. He established the Kollel in Ranana where he lives in memory of his father. Gives a shir yomi. Just published the Sefer. I gave Haskama to the Sefer. You have to see the Sefer with it. Baruch Hashem. So that's, by the way, and his sister told the father, go fly a kite. She went to Neve Daniel as a religious Zionist. You know, Baruch Hashem. The internet has brought back so many people. It's because, you see, generally speaking, I've gotten the emails from Perth, Australia, Chabadnikim all over the world. So some of them write, we're so spiritually lonely, but to hear the Shayurim, it keeps us company, it keeps us alert, it keeps us spiritually alive. So you talk about the internet, the computer, and I'll tell you one more story. Got to get back to wake up my wife and go on with the day. A man is, when you signed the ketuvah of Yaakov Kamenetsky, they once asked him, when does the Rosh Yeshiva want to leave the wedding? The Talmud is trying to say, you know that I signed, Rabbi Yaakov says, you know the Chav Chasman given off a ketuvah, I'm a shubah to my wife, go ask her when she wants to leave. So, there are many, many beautiful stories that come out of the computerization. But sometimes you throw out an idea and people become so inspired. I've spoken about Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich. And, you know, the world doesn't understand today's generation. It's what the communist regime was and who Yosef HaTzadik was. Imagine in jail he would fast if he couldn't eat what he considered kasher. When Pesach came, he told the jailers, the KGB, I cannot eat bread if I don't have matzah. I will starve to death, and I'm willing to starve to death. They couldn't allow him to starve to death because he was too well known in the Western world. They were meshuvah to America to a certain degree. There was some dollars coming in, trade. They couldn't act like Hitler. There was a limit. So every year they used to get him matzah through the Dutch embassy, because Israel had no embassy there. Dutch handled it. They would get matzah from Israel. Now, so Yosef HaTzadik, I told the following story in class. I'm very close to Yosef HaTzadik, so what I'm telling you is absolute fact. Every year, the KGB, whoever was responsible for the prisons, took the wrapping off. He shouldn't have the hana to see Hebrew lettering. One year, the matzah came too late. There was a snafu, and they didn't take off the wrapping. Okay? He said he held on to that wrapping till the day Bronfman got him out of jail in 1981. It was among his most precious possessions. Now, I told the story in class. You can't believe the reaction from all over the world. Letters, emails that came in, how it changed their spiritual life. One little story about Yosef HaTzadik. I can tell you something else. One story leads to another. I paskin the shaila. I saved the life through the internet. If one of the Talmidim of the Kol, you know, Reb Heschel Shecht always boasts that every year we have to convert some of our students. You know, America's America, they find. So this young man, 6'4", handsome, wonderful wife, two children already, comes over to me from Canada. And he says, Rebbe, you read something in class. I must ask you a question. It turns out his grandmother converted. Okay? His mother's mother. Grandmother, right. Mother's mother. Fine, she converted. But they weren't that from. Who knows who the rabbi was? Winnipeg, 1922, I believe it was. 20s. Almost 100 years ago. Wow. And maybe it was a great-grandmother. So what's the big deal? You're worried about the conversion, do another conversion, right? L'chumra, without a bracha. Only one problem. His father was a second-generation survivor, a Kohen. Follow? Kohen married, and he's going to do another conversion. It's raised as a Kohen. What are we talking about? And if there wasn't a proper conversion, it's not Hagoya, it's Halolot, all types of halachic problems. And he said for years this has troubled him. And now he can articulate, because it's something I discussed in class, what should he do? All right. So the first thing I did is I checked out the graduate list of JTS. Was there ever a conservative rabbi in the Winnipeg area in the 1920s? And the answer was a resounding no. Then I typed in, and I said, is your grandmother alive yet? Yes, so it's a great-grandmother. Yes, his grandmother's alive, and she says that the family tradition was, it was a real Orthodox rabbi who did the conversion. Even though they later become Bala Tshuva. His mother becomes a Bala Tshuva when she marries his father, who was from a Frum family, survivors. Okay? So I then punched into the computer, Winnipeg rabbis, 1920s. And I get a master's thesis, Chassidic Rebbeim in Winnipeg, in Canada, before World War II. And I print out, my secretary of the Kollel, Sherry, should live and be well, prints out the whole thesis. I go through it, and believe it or not, there was Chassidic Rebbe from Tzfat, who was in Winnipeg, who was the, and he lived there until he went back to die in Tzfat in his old age in the 70s. That's so far from the computer. Then my daughter says to me, someone she had handled, my daughter's a rabbinic law, a rabbinic pleader, a Tohenet Rabbani. She had handled the divorce with someone I know well, a Talmud Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. His roots are from Winnipeg. He tells me there are two men in their 90s living in Hollywood, Florida from Winnipeg who would remember everything. I call a Talmud of mine in Hollywood, Florida, David Goldis. I say, David, do you recognize these names? Recognize us? They're older gentlemen who dab with me every morning at the 7 o'clock minyan. I said, could you ask them what the situation was in Winnipeg in the 1920s? Both of them said exactly the same thing. Everyone knew that every gerut was done through this Hasidic Rebbe that had settled there from Tzfat. No one. So I come back and I remember I told my Talmud, 6'2", 3'4", looking down at me, you are totally Jewish, you are a Kohen, there's absolutely nothing to worry about. He broke into tears. And then I told him, how come you who were raised on a computer needed a dummy like myself to solve it? He said, Rebbe, you had siyata d'shmaya. I told him, you're right. It's a Gemara when a Rav Paskins Lalachi Asiyata Deshmaya, it's a Tshuva of the Meshiv Dava. And next time we meet, I'll give you all the details of that Tshuva of ours, the Netziv of Volozhin and German Orthodoxy, Rabbi Bamberger. You try to figure it out till the next time we meet.